Welcome to the Unheard Daily Podcast. The article you're about to listen to is narrated by the team over at NOAA and is taken from today's Unheard edition. You can read other great articles as well as listen to and watch more Unheard content over at unheard.com or via the Unheard app.
For NOAA, this is Martin Buchanan reading from Unheard, where on the 29th of April 2023, Patrick Deneen writes, J.S. Mill and the Despotism of Progress. In this oppressive era of hushed voices, furtive glances, and underground resistance, it is little wonder that John Stuart Mill's On Liberty has become an inspiration and a recourse for a new generation. Since its publication in 1859, Mill's brief on behalf of liberty of speech, opinion, expression, and action has become a rallying philosophy for those experiencing conditions of constraint, limitation, and oppression, whether political, social, religious, academic, or interpersonal. A century and a half after his death, Mill's argument on behalf of an atmosphere of freedom, limited only when words or actions result in harm, is arguably the defining philosophy governing the liberal order. Yet while Mill's text was written as a justification of a liberal society, today it is self-described conservatives who are most likely to invoke its arguments. If it was the free thinkers in the Victorian era who were likely to be cancelled by religious traditionalists, the source of most immediate concern for Mill, today the situation is the opposite. Conservatives and classical liberals of various stripes today regularly invoke Mill as a refutation against the oppressiveness of the progressives. One of America's more prominent religious conservatives, the Catholic legal theorist Robert George of Princeton University, has become among the most prominent of Millian free speech defenders. We should go back to John Stuart Mill, he characteristically suggested in 2022. Having legal protection for free, robust discourse in place is one thing, and it's a very important thing, and it's, as I say, a necessary thing, but it's not sufficient. In addition to those legal norms protecting free speech, we need to build a culture of free speech. Yet it is far from clear that Mill would be pleased by these new admirers of his work. Indeed, there's good reason to believe Mill would be deeply gratified by the new despotism his arguments have produced, the despotism of progress. Mill's case on behalf of liberty was not, as today's conservatives and libertarians mistakenly believe, an argument for freedom of expression as an end in itself, but rather a means toward a further end, regime change. The regime he hoped to overturn was the custom-bound society of Victorian England, as well as the traditional civilization of the West more broadly, particularly its classical and Christian inheritance. The regime he hoped to usher in was none other than the progressive hegemony that now dominates the major institutions of the West. Throughout his text, Mill is clear that liberty is a means of displacing what he called the despotism of custom. Robert George is correct that Mill's concern was less the narrowly legal defence of free speech, expression and action, and more concerned about the spectre of social conformity. Mill begins his text by arguing that an earlier generation of philosophers and political actors had secured formal liberalism, limited government and political representation of the demos. He observed that formal liberty was ultimately useless in a society that remained bound by traditional opinion, the social tyranny of the majority. His aim, then, was to secure the social conditions of liberty, aligning an increasingly liberal political order with the civic, social, and even private domains. For Mill, social conformity took a particular form, the untoward social dominance of the many over a small minority of people who were marked by the distinctive features of individuality. The oppression he decried percolated from the bottom up, an informal but nevertheless pervasive way of life that was reflected in society's customary practices. In Mill's Victorian era, such customs included what might still be categorised as manners and morals, regulating informally but powerfully everything from dress to forms of address, table manners to social comportment, expectations of church attendance, to avoidance of visible vices. Of course, it also involved social conformity to traditional sexual roles and behaviour, distinguishing between men and women, exerting strong pressure toward marriage, and dispersing the norm that marriage was the necessary institution in which children were born and sheltered, provided for by the man and typically raised primarily by the mother. This web of social expectations constituted a form of despotism, and for Mill, its source and most powerful enforcer was everyday people. His philosophy was an argument of how to liberate the unique, inventive, free-thinking few from the oppression of the herd-like, tradition-bound, narrow, and unadventurous many. Liberty was the means of moving the social order from one that was conservative to one that was liberationist. Indeed, Mill is clear that what he seeks is a society that is progressive. Customary societies, the greater part of the world, in fact, have no history. Here, Mill meant not that nothing happens in such societies, but that in tradition-bound settings, the future extensively resembles the past. By history, Mill means progress, a society of constant change, disruption, and transformation. For Mill, humans do not have a fixed nature, but rather are defined for the capacity to change and transform in unexpected and unpredictable ways. Humans are, he states, progressive beings, but that capacity can only be developed in progressive and not customary societies. For Mill, progress only occurs when the distinctive genius, originality, and adventurousness, the individuality of rare individuals, is liberated from the oppressiveness of the masses. In traditional societies, such unique individuals are thwarted from engaging in experiments in living. It is not sufficient to have formal rights to liberty, including free speech and freedom of expression. Because of the despotism of custom and the growing political influence of ordinary people, such individuals will need both active political protection from the masses and, better yet, eventually enjoy political control. So he wrote, "There needs protection also against the tyranny of the prevailing opinion and feeling, against the tendency of society to impose, by other means than civil penalties, its own ideas and practices, as rules of conduct on those who dissent from them." Mill recognised that ever more democratic societies would likely be not just socially dominated, but politically dominated by the backward views of ordinary people. The main project of On Liberty, as well as his work considerations of representative government, is how to secure, in the first instance, the political dominance of the progressive element of society, and thus ensure that the traditionalism of the social order first be restrained, subsequently sequestered, and ultimately transformed in a more progressive direction. The great obstacle to the emergence of a progressive elite was the pervasiveness of ordinary opinion. Mill had nothing but disdain for the backwardness of ordinary people, a view that to this day remains a hallmark of self-described progressives. Society, he bemoaned, was governed by the mediocrity and low stat of the human mind of the masses. He hoped that a small group of eccentrics would arise, and perhaps by persuasion of the more highly gifted and instructed one or few. Yet as a potential backstop to the difficulty of persuading such a mediocre mass, he also commended a system of plural voting, in which those with higher attainments of education would be given more votes. Above all, the demos had to be prevented from thwarting progress. In place of the despotism of custom, Mill proposed the despotism of progress. Only when we understand that, for Mill, liberty is a means to progress and not a good in itself, can we grasp some of the more seemingly jarring arguments contained in On Liberty. At the very opening of his text, Mill acknowledges that his argument for extensive liberty is meant only for societies that are already shifting in a progressive direction, such as England or the United States. Most nations, as he later acknowledges, have no history. In other words, they're not yet on a path of progress, and thus are not yet suited for liberty. In such cases, he writes on the sixth page of a text titled On Liberty, Despotism is a legitimate mode of government in dealing with barbarians, provided their end be improvement, and the means justified by effecting that end. These words are often excused by Mill's partisans as the time-bound prejudices of a man shaped by his time working for the East India Company, and doubtless they reflect a widespread sentiment. But they were, and remain today, a view endemic to a progressive mindset, particularly among those who believe themselves to be more progressed and therefore entitled to govern despotically over those who are deemed deplorable. On Liberty, then, is shrewdly mistitled. Had Mill wanted to highlight its more fundamental theme, it would rather have been titled On Progress. Liberty was never its main object. Rather, liberty was the mechanism that would transform a traditional bottom-up social order into a top-down progressive liberal regime. His text sought to align the extant liberal political order, based in theories of radical individual autonomy, with a yet unrealized progressive social order, dominated by those at liberty to engage in ever more radical experiments in living. Mill stated that the liberty of a progressive society constitutes a temporary intermediary condition. As mankind improves, that is, as we progress and become more progressive, the number of doctrines which are no longer disputed or doubted will be constantly on the increase. And the well-being of mankind may almost be measured by the number and gravity of truths which have reached the point of being uncontested. Those who believe that the homogeneity of viewpoint in modern institutions, such as universities, constitutes a betrayal of million principles have not been reading their Mill. For he is no ally of today's so-called conservatives, who look to him for assistance in securing minuscule platforms in an otherwise dominant progressive academy, or wider progressive social and political order. What they fail to understand is that the academy, as well as society as a whole, has been transformed in perfect conformity to million ambitions. Institutions dominated by progressive elites who impose their social radicalism upon the rest of society. The charges that they are hypocrites for failing to live up to the ideals of the university, or that they are illiberal, are therefore non-starters. They are, in fact, the realization of exactly the vision for society first articulated by Mill. Such conservatives pick up on liberty and believe they are holding a shield against progressive dominance. But what they have found is a sword that progressives no longer need and now have readily discarded. Rather than look to Mill, those seeking to resist today's progressive totalitarianism should look to the proles. Just as Mill affected a regime change, we should look to do the same by aligning ourselves with the instinctive traditionalism of the demos that Mill deplored. In either regime, some theoretical condition of true liberty is purely fictional, and not an aim requisite for a flourishing society. We will either have today's despotism of progress, or the restoration of good custom. In the hopes of encouraging the latter, it is time for a revolution against the revolution. You are listening to Unheard, where Patrick Deneen writes, J.S. Mill and the Despotism of Progress. This article was published on the 29th of April 2023 and was read by Martin Buchanan for NOAA.